then Sangha or spiritual community also means Bhikshu Sangha or monastic order. This is perhaps the most familiar sense in which the word is used. The Bhikshu Sangha or monastic order or spiritual community in the sense of monastic order consists of all fully ordained monks or bhikshus, as they really should be called. Monks is something of a misnomer and tends to conjure up all the wrong ideas, as I've often said in this place. I remember one person coming here through the Vihara and was rather surprised that he was allowed to speak to the monks. He had come to understand in some way or other, I don't know how, that monks weren't allowed to speak to anybody. He's probably mixing us up with the Trappists. But as you know, we're certainly not Trappists, not on Sunday afternoons anyway. People might be rather disappointed if we were. Now, all fully ordained monks or bhikshus who have received what we call the Upasampada, full acceptance into the Sangha, observe 150 rules. And that's what, of course, one usually says. And in some parts of the Buddhist world, the full 150 are actually observed. But many are relevant rather to tropical conditions, conditions in the East, and quite a number of them have been tacitly dropped, not only in the West, but in the East itself in modern times. The most important of the monastic rules are four, which are called Paurajika, because if you break these, then you are permanently excluded from the monastic order and can't come back in this life. You have to wait for another existence before you can come back. And these are, first of all, that you must not intentionally take the life of any human being. That's the first. Secondly, that you must not take anything which is not given, anything of such value as the taking of it could bring you before a court of law or subject you to punishment. Thirdly, of course, one must altogether abstain from any form of sexual indulgence. That's the third one. And fourthly, and this is perhaps the most interesting, one must not lay false claim to any spiritual powers or attainments. And all of these, of course, are scrupulously observed, but one might say, in a sense, from a spiritual point of view, the fourth is the most scrupulously observed at all, of all. One can even say that it is, in all Buddhist countries, spiritual bad manners to talk about one's personal attainments. In this country, of course, people don't quite have this sort of sense, and visiting people from the East are liable to be asked whether they're enlightened or not, and whether they've had samadhi, and whether they've seen nirvana, and so on and so forth. But in the East, these questions are not asked, because it's understood that even if one has had a certain experience, to make it the subject of a personal claim is not in the least desirable. So in all Buddhist countries, monks, nuns and lay people also are very careful in this particular matter. I remember in this connection in the Pali scriptures, there's a very interesting little episode. Sariputra apparently has spent the whole of the afternoon in the forest meditating, and towards evening he comes out and he meets his friend Moggallana. So Moggallana says, "Your face is wonderfully shining today. It seems quite bright. What have you been doing?" So Sariputta says, "I have been meditating in the forest." And he said, "While I was meditating, there did not come to me the thought that I am meditating. That thought didn't come to me." Now this is very significant. "I was meditating," he says, "but the thought did not come to me, I am meditating." So long as that thought is there, you're not really meditating. You haven't got beyond the level of the personal I, the subjective self. In a sense, you're only really meditating when you are not meditating, when meditation, as it were, just happens. So Moggallana commented on this with a little Pali pun, which I shall try to explain in English. He said, "This is how true people speak." He said, "They tell the atta," that is to say the essence, the gist of the matter, "but they don't bring in the atta," that means the self. So the little pun between atta and atta. They tell the gist of the matter, but they don't bring in the self. They tell the atta, but they don't bring in the atta. Now that's what most of us are doing. We do a little meditation, in comes the utter, in comes the self. Practice a little dana, or a little sila, in comes the self. This is what is happening all the time. We say, I do this, I have got that. I've understood something else, or I've realized something else. It comes in, it creeps in, it wriggles in, we might say, all the time. So therefore, as the fourth of the four parajikas, there is this very important rule not to lay claim falsely to spiritual attainments and experiences. This is not to say that if one has had such experiences, if one possesses such attainments, one may not, under certain special conditions, admit that one has. One should be very, very careful about laying any claim, even if there is, objectively speaking, a sort of basis for it. So these are the four basic rules for the monastic order, and all the rest are secondary, in the sense that even if one breaks them, there is a reparation and, as it were, atonement, which can be made. One doesn't have to leave the order. Now, in most parts of the Buddhist world, the bhikshus, the fully ordained monks, live together in communities. In Tibet, in the old days, you had monastic communities of up to even nearly 7,000 monks. I remember sometimes in Kalimpong, my Tibetan Lama friends have happened to refer to certain monasteries in Tibet and tell me incidentally that, well, they were a very small monastery. And if I'd inquire, well, how small, they'd say, oh, not many monks, there are about 500 or 600. So that was their idea of a small monastery. In this country, of course, if we had 10 monks in a single building, we'd consider it a very big monastery indeed. But that's how it was in Tibet. One does, of course, often find in different parts of the Buddhist world, monks are living as hermits, but they're not supposed to remain altogether out of touch with the Sangha. They're supposed, as it were, to report at regular intervals so that the Sangha can keep a fatherly eye on them. Now, apart from the Bhikshu Sangha, the monastic order of monks, there's also an order of nuns, bhikshunis. This has died out in many parts of the Buddhist world, especially in the Theravada countries, but it does survive in Vietnam, for instance, and it did survive in China, and I believe there is a branch of it also in Taiwan, or Formosa. So the rules of the nuns are practically the same as those of the monks. There's no really great difference between them. The nuns also observe these 150 rules. They also devote themselves to study, meditation and teaching, and they're normally shown, or should be shown according to Buddhist tradition, the same respect that the monks are shown. So this is the spiritual community in the sense of bhikshu sangha, or monastic order.